This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Senate Democrats may seat Roland Burris after all. Minnesota declares Al Franken the winner, but a lawsuit looms. Bill Richardson bows out as Obama's pick for Commerce. New Congress, new year. Same old political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics. And as usual, there is a lot to talk about. Senate Souris in Illinois, Minnesota, and New York. But Colorado managed a smooth succession, at least so far. Aides to the president-elect and the governor of New Mexico argue about who overlooked that minor detail about the federal investigation. And we begin first, as always, with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you.
Thank you so much. Leah Panetta has been mentioned, although not been officially announced, as Obama's choice to head up the Central Intelligence Agency. Okay, name the three former CIA directors who ran for Congress.
So if you think you know the identities of the three former Central Intelligence Agency directors who also ran for Congress, give us a call. 800-989-8255 is the phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. And Ken, we have to begin with an apparent 180 from Senate Democrats on Roland Burris.
That's right. Harry Reid said from the beginning that no matter if embattled governor, Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, decides to pick somebody to replace Barack Obama for that vacant Senate seat, the Senate Democrats would just not seat him or her. I mean, he made that clear. Then Blagojevich surprised everybody by naming Roland Burris last week, which was a remarkable
theater. I think Roland Burris called it.
Exactly. Yes. And now there's a lot of pressure on Senate Democrats to name Burris because Burris has not been implicated in any wrongdoing. He's legally qualified to serve as senator. And Blagojevich basically he's still the governor. He hasn't been impeached. He hasn't been removed. He hasn't been indicted yet. He hasn't been convicted of anything.
I haven't checked the wires lately.
No, nothing's changed. So, matter of fact, if you listen to Patrick Fitzgerald, it sounds like it's going to take a long time.
Before the indictment is forthcoming, he may be impeached by the Illinois legislature before that.
That's true. So as of now, at least as of this moment, the governor is certainly in his legal rights to name the successor. Now, Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats argue that, well, you have to have two signatures on the certification, and that includes the Secretary of State of Illinois, Jesse White. Jesse White has refused to sign because he feels that Blagojevich is corrupt. But it's interesting, he's also, when Blagojevich signed papers to have a special election for Rahm Emanuel's House seat, Jesse White signed that. So it's interesting, Jesse White is deciding what he wants to sign and what he doesn't want to sign, which does sound like it smacks of politics, and that's why this case is now going to go before the Illinois Supreme Court, whether you need both signatures.
And it was interesting, the Senate Democrats were totally in lockstep on this question until yesterday. Dianne Feinstein of California, the chairman of the Rules Committee, said, wait a minute, this all looks legit to me.
Something happened to Dianne Feinstein which we don't know about. First of all, she was very upset about the apparent leak of Leon Panetta, CIA director, since the Dianne Feinstein will be the new chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee and nobody told her about this impending nomination. She said, wait a second, you know, so she was pretty critical of Panetta, and then she broke away from the rest of the Senate Democrats by saying, well, we are going to seat Roland Burris because he's qualified, and that's all there is to it. It was interesting to watch Dianne Feinstein break away from Senate Democratic dogma twice in one day, and which makes me wonder whether, and now she's 75 years old, but there is talk about her running for governor of California in 2010. She ran once before in 1990, lost to Pete Wilson, but there is talk of her running for governor, so I'm wondering if she's just had it with Washington.
Meanwhile, the endless recount in Minnesota is over until it goes to court. Final board certification was that Al Franken won by, 226 votes?
225 votes, right.
I miscounted one.
That's right. That's because one of those deceased people from Chicago. And what's interesting is that the Senate, Harry Reid could have decided to try to seat Al Franken yesterday. And, of course, that would have been a big brouhaha. And you know what?
Because he doesn't have a certification from Minnesota.
Well, exactly. And Norm Coleman, which is, by the way, Norm Coleman is no longer the senator from Minnesota because his term expired last Saturday. There is only one senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, the Democrat. Democrat. So Norm Coleman yesterday filed suit saying that hundreds of registered rejected absentee ballots from Republican areas should have been counted. There are at least 100 Democratic ballots in Democratic areas that may have been double counted. There have been ineligible, exactly. I can say Blagojevich, but I can't say ineligible ballots from rejected voters. So this could take on 3 weeks, could take 2 months before we have a senator in Minnesota.
And here's what Norm Coleman had to say.
From my perspective, I just want to make sure that the votes cast in this election were counted fairly, they were counted once, and that there were uniform standards. And in terms of the people of Minnesota, I really believe that the people of Minnesota want to make sure that we get this right, no matter what side of the aisle you're on.
Well, people in Minnesota apparently getting a little fed up with all of this proceeding. In the meantime, they only, of course, have one member in the United States Senate from the state of Minnesota.
I think most people feel that ultimately it will be Al Franken, the senator. Certainly Norm Coleman is within his rights to protest this or do a legal challenge as far as he can go with it, but most people suspect they won't go that far.
In the meantime, we have somebody who thinks they know the answer to our trivia question, which is Leon Panetta could be the choice to be the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. What three other former directors of Central Intelligence ran for Congress at one point or another in their lives? Let's see if we get Phil on the line. Phil calling from Independence in Missouri.
Yes. My thought is that the three are probably Porter Goss, George H.W. Bush, and Alan Dulles.
Well, he got two of the first three right. Porter Goss, of course, was a Republican congressman from Florida when he was named by President Bush.
Longtime chairman of the Senate Intelligence,
House Intelligence. Exactly. And George H.W. Bush was a former congressman from Texas. He was named by President Ford in 1976 to become the head of the CIA. He later became, I think, the 41st president of the United States.
Something like that. But he had lunch at the White House today.
He did, with all the former presidents. Jimmy Carter was there, Bill Clinton, another former president, George W. Bush. He's still president.
And who brought the cards?
Exactly. And Barack Obama, the president-elect. But Alan Dulles never ran for office. His brother, John Foster Dulles, was briefly a U.S. senator from New York, but Alan Dulles never ran for office. You have two of the three who have run for office.
So we're still looking for one former Central Intelligence Agency director who also ran for Congress. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. So, Phil, you're going to get two-thirds of a no prize.
That's better than nothing.
That's okay. Bye-bye. In the meantime, there is another Senate seat that's coming open. That is in the state of New York, where Caroline Kennedy, of course, the daughter of the former President John F. Kennedy, made herself available for the nomination. She seemed to be picking up support from among many people. But then there were broadcasts of interviews that she gave. This broadcast widely in the state of New York, an interview with the New York Times.
There's a range of views in the Democratic Party, and I am a proud Democrat. Those are the values, middle class tax relief, helping working families, fixing the health care system. Those are the national priorities right now. So, those are the issues that I, would expect. I am a Democrat. That is, I'm trying to become a Democratic senator. So I don't, there are issues along the way that I'm sure that, people have differences of opinion on. There's controversies in all these areas.
Ken, is that her, Sarah Palin moment,
Well, what's funny about this is that, I thought that she was running for the Hudson Valley, not just the Valley of California. It was kind of unsettling to hear Caroline Kennedy, whom we all love and remember as being this just, this perfect child, who is now a 51-year-old woman who really wants to be the U.S. Senator from New York. David Paterson, of course, the governor of New York, does not like all this speculation. He says, we have plenty of time to decide who will be the next senator once Hillary Clinton is confirmed as Secretary of State. It could be the end of this month. It could be into February. When that happened, then he'll decide. But there seems to be, Caroline Kennedy's name still seems to be the name most wanted. Widely mentioned State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, who's also on that, list. He's a possibility.
In the Senate, the former governor.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Colorado managed to do all of this, and they took a new tack by announcing they would be the son of a former president.
I didn't expect that. That's very good. Well, the new senator to replace Ken Salazar, who will be the next Secretary of the Interior, assuming he gets it confirmed, will be Michael Bennett. He is the son of former NPR president Douglas Bennett. Very nice. I like that very much. And for those of you who don't remember this, Doug Bennett once ran against Chris Dodd for Congress in Connecticut in the primary.
Ooh.
But anyway, Michael Bennett is the Denver Public Schools Administrator. He used to be an aide to Denver Mayor John Hickenlooper. A lot of people who remember Burke Hickenlooper, the senator from Iowa, we're hoping for another Hickenlooper in the Senate because it's been a long time since
between Hickenloopers. Yeah.
Exactly. You know. So, but Michael Bennett, a surprise choice. Some Democrats are nervous. They don't feel that he's never run for office before, and he still has to run for office in 2010. He doesn't have the electoral experience, but he's a widely respected scholar, a government person, an educator. He was up possibly for Secretary of Education. But the Republicans, all the Republicans who've been mentioned as possible candidates for that Senate seat in 2010 have lost before. So the GOP has been on a losing streak in Colorado. They would love to win this Senate seat.
And here's another trivia question. Aaron, via email, Porter Goss, George H.W. Bush, and former Kansas City Police Chief Clarence Kelly, who as an aide greenlighted the controversial documentary from Frederick Wiseman, Law and Order, filmed there in 1968.
But never ran for Congress.
And here's Jim in Jacksonville, George H.W. Bush, Porter Goss, and William Casey.
William Casey is the correct answer. People don't remember this, and unfortunately I do remember this, but in 1966, William Casey ran for the Republican primary for Congress on Long Island against Stephen Derunian, as we all remember, Stephen Derunian, former congressman, for the seat then held by Lester Wolf. So that is correct.
So that is correct. Thank you. You get the no prize, and we're going to make that no prize worth something one of these days. Anyway, thanks very much for all of you who managed to get an email or a call through. We'll continue with our political junkie. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Congressman Danny Davis. We know, of course, Roland Burris was called by Rod Blagojevich to see if he would accept the nomination, the appointment, to replace Barack Obama in the United States Senate. Well, the first person Blagojevich called was Danny Davis. We'll find out about that. Coming up, stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Yeah, make you glad you got me. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and Ken Rudin is with us, NPR's political editor and one of its most prolific bloggers. You can get your latest fix at npr.org. He, of course, is our political junkie. If you'd like to talk with him about Obama's cabinet picks or the agenda for the next Congress, what lies ahead for the new president, our phone number is 800-989-8255. But, well, we're hoping to talk with Danny Davis, the Democratic congressman from Illinois, who was first offered the appointment as the junior senator from Illinois, from embattled Illinois governor. Isn't that his first name now?
Embattled. Yes.
Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, and we're expecting him to call shortly. But there's a couple of things we did not get to in the first segment, Ken Rudin, one of which was Jeb Bush, the president's younger brother, was thought to be a candidate to replace Mel Martinez in the United States Senate from Florida. He's not going to run for re-election in 2010, and Jeb Bush announced a surprise decision this week.
It was a surprise, although a lot of people said they could never imagine Jeb Bush serving in the Senate. He obviously has wider political ambitions. He says he wants to be part of the restructuring and the new future of the Republican Party, but he just didn't want to run for the Senate this time. He said it had nothing to do with the fact that his brother is so unpopular, and he is. But it's interesting, in the last few days, we heard both his father, the former president, and his brother, the president, the current president, talk about Jeb Bush making a great senator, and yet he said he did not want to do this.
And we also had Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, named to be commerce secretary by President-elect Barack Obama, withdraw his name because, well, it seems he's under federal investigation.
Well, he is not, although there is a federal investigation into a pay-for-play scheme in New Mexico where a California company gave several $100,000 to Governor Richardson's political action committees and suddenly got a $1.48 million contract with the state. And given all the embarrassment of what's going on with in Illinois, the last thing the new Obama administration wanted was the taint of some kind of a scandal. Richardson, again, has not been personally involved, we don't think, although the investigation is still going on. But it's interesting, everybody knew about this investigation last summer, and the fact that the Bill Richardson was still considered for the cabinet position, I guess Richardson told people that it was not going to touch him personally, but it may get closer to him than people thought.
And some infighting between Obama aides and Richardson aides as to who told who what and how this became a blow-up. Why didn't we notice that there was a federal investigation going
exactly
on? Yeah. Let's get a caller on the line. This is Jeff. Jeff with us from Oklahoma City.
Hi, Dale. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks.
Say, listen, I think Bill Richardson was an excellent choice for Commerce Secretary, and I'm wondering, I haven't heard any name circulated as to who his replacement might be. Do we have any ideas about that?
Sanjay Gupta, I think.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. He's supposed to be the nominee for
Surgeon General.
Surgeon General.
And the question is, does the American people have the patience for him?
Oh.
I'm so sorry. Well, some of the names mentioned, Javier Becerra, the congressman from California, has been mentioned. NPR's Madeline Brand interviewed Governor Jennifer Granholm yesterday of Michigan, and her name had been mentioned. She said she will not leave to join the administration in any capacity, so her name should be crossed off. Kathleen Sebelius, the term-limited governor of Kansas, has also been mentioned, but again, she's also being talked about as either being the next president of the University of Kansas or running for an open Senate seat in 2010 because Sam Brownback is retiring.
Well, that's interesting because his perspective has been so unique in terms of looking at from a small town perspective. Obviously, New Mexico isn't very big, and I'm hoping that someone will replace him with enthusiasm about revitalizing downtown's Main Street, you know, really affecting the small town people.
All right, Jeff, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Stephen. Stephen with us from Salem, Oregon.
Yeah, I have a question about the replacement for Joe Biden. I don't know whether he was his seat is open right now or whether he's going to resign or not. But I'm just wondering what the deal is in Delaware, whether they have chosen a replacement for Joe Biden or not.
Joe Biden sworn in yesterday as senator from the state of Delaware. He was reelected a senator in addition to being elected vice president-elect. And that decision has also been made.
Yeah, unlike Barack Obama, who resigned his Senate seat, Joe Biden has not done that. He's been in the Senate since 73. He was reelected, as Neil just said, in November and was sworn in yesterday. Vice President Dick Cheney was there, one vice president who is succeeding vice president to another. But he will resign the next couple of days and or weeks, certainly before January 20th. And Ted Kaufman, who's a longtime Joe Biden aide, has been named by outgoing Governor Minner to succeed Biden in the Senate for just 2 years. And basically, it's keeping the Senate seat warm for Joe Biden's son, who is the state attorney general of Delaware, who is currently in Iraq with the National Guard. So, Ted Kaufman said he would accept the appointment to the Senate. He will not run in 2010, and it'll be wide open for Beau Biden to come back when he comes back.
Now, I heard this on CNN last night. I heard Joe Biden's name mentioned. Now, does he have a calculus or a strategy for waiting so long?
Well, his son is serving in Iraq at the moment, and so the idea, I think, was that it would be inappropriate for him to serve in the United States Senate and serve in the National Guard at the same time.
No, I think what Stephen is asking is, why did Joe Biden not resign already and let Ted Kaufman take over the seat? It's not clear. I don't know if I really don't know, and it's something that I need to investigate because it seems very odd that he is held on this long because they already have the appointment named.
Stephen,
yeah.
Thanks,
and
sir.
The appointment is going to be his son.
No, appointment will not be his son.
It's
his son is expected to run for the office in 2 years.
When he returns from Iraq, but the appointment will be Ted Kaufman, who's been Biden's longtime aide.
Okay, now I understand. I wish I would hear more news on this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen to Political Junkie every week.
Much.
Appointment listening. Stephen, thanks very much for the call. And joining us now is Congressman Danny Davis, who represents the 7th District of Illinois. And he is with us on the phone from Capitol Hill. And Congressman Davis, nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
And it was just about an hour ago that Roland Burris held a news conference where he said he expects very shortly to represent the state of Illinois in the United States Senate. Let's listen to a bit of what he had to say.
When we get these two matters out of the way, the signature on my good friend, and I say my good friend, Secretary Jesse White, and of course my testimony before the impeachment committee tomorrow in Springfield, then we will proceed then to submit our documentation to the Senate. This will go to the Rules Committee, and they will then assess it and let me know what the outcome is.
So, Congressman Davis, like everybody else, I think you now expect Roland Burris to be the next junior senator from the state of Illinois.
Well, it does indeed look very promising, and it does indeed look as though the Senate may very well confirm Roland Burris to become the junior senator from Illinois.
Now, we heard that, in fact, Governor Blagojevich first called you to offer you the appointment.
Well, that is true. That is true. The governor did not call me. He actually sent an emissary that I met with and had discussion with who offered the position to me from the governor.
And, of course, we have to ask, what was that conversation like?
Well, I was a little bit surprised, not too much, but it was actually Christmas Eve, and I indicated that I'd need some time to think about it, and that I would think about it with my wife on Christmas Day, and I'd let them know the next day, which was going to be Friday morning. We agreed to meet again at 9 o'clock. We did, and I shared with them that I really appreciated the governor's confidence, but I felt that there was so much turmoil surrounding the situation, and because of the fact that I've got so many issues that I'm dealing with of a what I call different substantive matter, such as how do you successfully reintegrate ex-offenders back into communities, how do you get more kids to go to school and not drop out, and how do you keep people from having their lights and gas turned off in the wintertime, all of those kinds of things, and that it would take too much of my time just answering inquiries about the governor. Why did I take the appointment that I declined? At this time, I would not do it.
At this point, with Mr. Burris looking like he's going in, any regrets?
No, as a matter of fact, to be very honest about it, I actually suggested that they go and see Mr. Burris.
Really?
Yes.
And everybody says that though he's, I think, lost the last four times he's run for election there in the state of Illinois, everybody seems to think that he's, an outstanding public servant.
Well, he was an outstanding public servant. For 20 years, he was a statewide elected official without any hint of impropriety, without any hint of scandal. As a matter of fact, he was always known as Mr. Clean. We used to jokingly say that he was as clean as a hound's tooth, and that's pretty much been Roland's life, not only in terms of elected office, but in other public, civic, community, public service activities of which both he and his family have been engaged. And so he's a great appointment, and I look forward to his confirmation and to him going ahead and doing the best possible job that could get done.
There is speculation that part of the deal here, I know it's impossible to think that deals might be made, but that part of the deal here is that, in fact, Mr. Burris might have agreed that maybe he will not run for election in 2 years' time in 2010. Of course, he is 71 years old.
Well, I don't know that I think Roland would be engaged in any kind of deal. Of course, one of the reasons I did not accept the appointment is that I got a strong feeling that, you know, there's going to be a stiff election in 2010, especially unless you're able to really coalesce the Democratic Party in Illinois, and Roland may very well be able to do that. I said early on that he had more confidence in his ability to bring all of those disparate forces together by 2010 than I did. And since I knew that I intended to be around longer than 2010, it just simply was not the best option for me under those circumstances.
Ken?
Congressman, Roland Burris lost the last three times he ran for governor. He lost the primary for the Senate. He lost to Mayor Daley in Chicago. 13 months from now, or 14 months, will be the Democratic primary for the Senate in 2010. And given the fact that Governor Blagojevich may be even more in worse legal trouble than he is now, do you expect a challenge to Burris if Burris decides to run again in 2010?
Well, let me just say, everybody who's run against Mayor Daley has lost.
Well, that's true enough.
That's true. But he did run three times.
Including myself. Right. I ran against Mayor Daley in the 90s.
Well, let's forget about that one. But, you know, three times for governor, once for the Senate. There's no record that he's been a big fundraiser. You're going to need a lot of money to run statewide in 2010.
I think that it poses a real challenge. But I think that Roland feels that he's up to the challenge. And, of course, by 2010, he may have such an outstanding record in the Senate that maybe nobody challenges him in the primary. Maybe nobody challenges him. But, I mean, he's willing to take that kind of risk, whereas I was not prepared to take that kind of risk. I mean, if I'm running for the United States Senate, I want to have the full backing of the Democratic Party establishment in Illinois behind me, mm-hmm. and with me. And whether or not one can generate that kind of support between now and then, I had some reservation about it. Roland seems to not have much reservation, and I think that's why he said yes to the governor. And he's prepared to go ahead and be the senator.
And seems to be having the time of his life. We're talking with Congressman Danny Davis, Democrat of Illinois, and, of course, political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Congressman, another question. Both Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Dick Durbin both said today that race is not a factor. Roland Burris certainly agreed. But there have been comments about race, notably from Bobby Rush and others, talked about lynching, things like that. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that people felt, because they couldn't come up with any other reason. I'm saying, you know, if somebody had said, you know, we think that maybe this candidate will have a difficult time raising money, then money is the issue. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody had said, this candidate does not have certain amount of experience, then experience would have been the issue. And since initially none of those issues were raised, then of course there were some people who would think that race had something to do with it. I've always felt, quite frankly, that there were individuals who felt that an African-American would have a more difficult time of winning an election than perhaps a non-African-American in the state of Illinois, though, which was strange given the fact
that
both Carol Moseley Braun and Barack Obama ran for the Senate statewide and won, and that Roland Burris actually has run four times and won.
Statewide.
Statewide. And although he has lost also, but he did win four times.
By some people, do you mean Rahm Emanuel, the incoming president's chief of staff?
Well, I don't know just who, but obviously it was in the environment. It was in the climate. It was part of the mix. It was part of what people were thinking. It was part of what people were feeling. And I think if this works out, then I want to commend, Senator Harry Reid, and I want to commend my good friend Dick Durbin, as well as Roland Burris, for being able to arrive at a conclusion. And certainly I think the comments made by Senator Dianne Feinstein earlier yesterday helped a great deal to set the stage for some meaningful negotiation.
Well, Congressman Davis, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us for today. And you're planning to run for re-election to Congress in 2010?
I sure do.
Okay. Whichever
right.
House.
Thank you so
all right.
much.
Thank you very much. Danny Davis represents the 7th District from the state of Illinois. And as he told us earlier, he was tabbed by an emissary from Governor Blagojevich to maybe take the appointment to the remainder of Senator Barack Obama's term, declined it, and directed that emissary next to approach, the man, Ken Rudin, who looks like now he's going to be the next junior senator from Illinois.
But, you know, we have seen a Democratic fratricide in Illinois before. When Carol Moseley Braun was elected to the Senate in 1992, she defeated Alan Dixon, the Democratic senator, in the Democratic primary. So it'll be very interesting to see. Again, the primary, the Democratic primary, is March of 2010, just 12, 13 months from now. And it'll be interesting to see if Roland Burris is the next junior senator, whether he survives the Democratic challenge.
Political junkie Ken Rudin with us here in Studio 3A. He joins us every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation as our political junkie. And, of course, you can read his political junkie blog. Just join that at npr.org. Ken, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
And coming up, we're going to be talking with Harry Shearer, well, a man of many voices. We're going to be talking to him, though, about some broadcasts that he's intercepted of silence. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Harry Shearer is a man of many parts, best known for the voices he provides on The Simpsons to characters including Montgomery Burns and Ned Flanders, and as an actor in films like Spinal Tap, a webcaster, a blogger for Huffington Post. He uses his own voice as the host of Le Show on public radio stations, but he also gets attention for presentations of Significant Silence. Amid the noise of the 2008 election season, Shearer hosted online silent debates that paired up presidential candidates caught on camera in the moments before they went live. An exhibit at the Aldrich Museum of Contemporary Art in Connecticut features videos that Shearer has collected of politicians and media personalities, all taken in the moments before their images and voices are broadcast around the country. If you'd like to talk with Harry Shearer about his project, give us a call. We'd also like to hear from those of you who make public appearances of one sort or another. What's your routine for the minutes between the green room and the air? The phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation online. Go to npr.org. That's our website. And just click on Talk of the Nation. Harry Shearer's video installation is called the Silent Echo Chamber, and he joins us from a studio in Hollywood. Happy New Year, Harry.
Thank you, Neil. Same to you.
And while this latest project involves 2008 candidates, you've been eavesdropping on TV shows for a long time now.
You know, you use these words, eavesdropping, interception. It implies a certain skulking. I receive this material, and I catalog it, and I assemble it, and I savor the fact that in these moments, television returns to its roots as a visual medium. So much of television today is basically radio with pictures for economic reasons. It's the cheapest form of television is to slap a couple of guys or gals in seats with, you know, robot cameras and have them yak at each other. And this sort of – what you do as a viewer when you see that kind of television, I think, is a different response, a different behavior than you indulge in if the TV isn't yelling at you, if there's something actually to look at. I noticed this when I, you know, turn down the sound on basketball games and don't hear guys yelling at me. And I see I watch the game in a different way. And I think you view these personalities that we think we know in a different way when they're not talking at you, when they're just looking at you mm-hmm. and you're looking at them and you get to kind of clock their behavior.
I think it was the director of the gallery there in Connecticut called it sort of like a Rorschach test.
It is. Without the ink, you start interpreting. You know, part of the fun for me is, you know, in the comedy world, you really have to sort of state your premise and hope that people get the point. And especially if you're trying to do something for a commercial venture, you have to pitch it and say, it's this and it's not that, but it's this. You have to be very specific. And in the art world in which this thing exists, you sort of put it there and say, you figure it out. You interpret it. And you get to kind of linger if you're not too well known and overhear people kind of explaining it to themselves or to each other. And that's part of the fun of it.
I understand you first saw these raw feeds, and these are broadcast by television networks sort of on satellites to various facilities. They're not intended for broadcast per se. But I gather you first noticed them on the set of Saturday Night Live. Of course, NBC gets a lot of feeds from a lot of places.
Yeah, not on the sets necessarily, but in my office. And in your office, you have this what looked like a cable box, but it got all the feeds from that were coming into NBC, and you got to see. Actually, the very first thing like this I saw, though, was the famous videotape some brilliant engineer made of Richard Nixon in the 10 minutes before he resigned the presidency. And it was so revealing of Nixon's character. And so hypnotic and mesmerizing that I think that's really what hooked me.
And there are some that are not necessarily in this installation, but some that are sort of gotcha videos. There's a famous one of Dan Rather deciding whether to put on his coat or not.
And whether to wear the trench coat with the collar up and
yes.
the collar down.
Yeah. And a later one that you've posted of Katie Couric citing that episode and fussing with her own coat.
Yes. Making fun of it. And then, you know, it's the problem a lot of us have. You know, we make fun of something and then we become what we make fun of. And those talking ones are posted at mydamnchannel.com.
And that's your website.
Yeah.
Now, and the difference with these, the silence, and they are quite different. John McCain, for example, just sort of looking steadily into the camera, not moving very much at all.
Yeah, those are the ones that I think, you know, really when they're assembled in a room and at the Aldrich Museum in Ridgefield, Connecticut, they are assembled in a little room that they've built. And you have people like John McCain just sort of staring at you in what looks like real time. And it when you get a bunch of them, it starts getting a little creepy and starts, you start feeling like people are looking at you. So it has a lot of different. You're looking at them, they're looking at you, and it has a lot of different sort of resonances that start going on.
I wonder, does it make you self-conscious in the moments before you go on air?
You know, I was going on air with Rachel Maddow last week, and they were having technical problems, and so I was sitting there for about 20 minutes, and with myself in mind, I just sat and closed my eyes, because if you don't have the eyes, you don't have anything.
So self-conscious enough to close the eyes to make sure.
That's right. That's right.
Nobody's
well, also just a way of relaxing. But also, if you don't have my eyes, you don't have me.
Let's see if we get a caller on the line. 800-989-8255. What do you do before you get ready to go on mic or on air? Give us a call or send us an email, talk@npr.org. Aaron's calling. Aaron from Nampa. Is that right, in Idaho?
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Taking my call. I just want to say I'm a big fan of yours, Harry.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I play in a rock band, and I play in front of hundreds of people on a pretty regular basis.
Lucky you.
Yeah. And, you know, in order to deal with nerves, besides carrying around a bottle of Pepto-Bismol, I busy myself with just doing all the logistical stuff myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky enough not to have roadies, so... I can't imagine what people would do with their nerves if they have no menial tasks to do ahead of time if they're just sitting there alone with their nerves.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Sometimes money just buys you misery, and that's a great example where you have to do the logistical stuff yourself. Your anxiety has a place to go. The one thing I've learned in a long time in show business is that you really do have to experience the anxiety some way. If you try to escape it, it's going to come bite you later on when you're on stage and when you really don't need it. It serves a great purpose. It generates the adrenaline that makes you bigger than life when you get on stage. So it's a good thing to experience. It's not pleasant to experience, but it's a necessary part of the process.
Totally, yeah.
Aaron, when's your next gig?
February 5th, actually.
And where are you going to be playing?
We're going to be playing at a local coffee house called The Flying M. Hopefully there will be hundreds of people.
All right, Aaron, I got three words of advice for you. Turn it up.
All right. They go to 11.
All right, man. Thanks.
Good luck, Aaron.
Thanks.
Let's see if we can go now to this is Will with us in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Yeah, hey, How you doing?
All right.
Big fan of Harry Shearer.
Thank you.
Glad to hear you not as Mo or Mr. Burns.
Thank you.
A quick question for you. It's interesting how these people prepare themselves for their on-camera face to mm-hmm. see their off-camera face. Do you really think that gives you a good view into their personality, or is it more of something we all do? And we all have our on-camera face and our off-camera face.
Obviously we're all different in public than we are behind closed doors. That's no revelation. But to see who they are when they don't have their public face on is something revealing about who, you know, about character. If you see, to take that example I gave earlier of Richard Nixon sitting there waiting to resign the presidency of the United States, it's very revealing what he does. It's very him. It's nobody else. I would wager would be doing what he's doing at those in those crucial 10 minutes. So it does give you a sense of who he really was. And it's not about the stuff that, you know, ooh, he picked his nose, or ooh, he blinks, and when his eyes are closed, he looks goofy. It's the stuff that's really unique to the individual in the moments before they put the public face is, you know, when you're trying. My theory is none of us work as hard as we do trying to be normal. So, you know, we're all trying to look like, well, I'm normal now, you know, I'm in public. But it's the other thing that's unique and sort of interesting and revealing, I think.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, thank you for the phone call. What you've been doing this for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
What is the most surprising thing that you've ever received?
Well, I would say the most unique. You can't be most unique, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Was the only uncontrolled piece of footage of Ronald Reagan during his presidency, because they were great in controlling his access to the camera and vice versa. And he was rehearsing the coin toss for the Super Bowl, because ABC was doing its first Super Bowl, and they thought, oh, we'll do a big thing with a coin toss, and Ronald Reagan in the White House will toss the coin and via satellite, and we'll have it in Stanford Stadium where the game was being held. And so there's 20 minutes of Ronald Reagan rehearsing the Super Bowl coin toss, which I do believe is the only uncontrolled, unscripted video during the entire Reagan presidency.
There were some unrehearsed moments on radio.
Yes, the famous 5 minutes until we bomb Russia, right?
Yes, indeed. We're talking with Harry Shearer about the moments of silence that he's captured. He's put them in an exhibition that is now on display. And if I can find the right piece of paper, it's on display.
Aldrich Museum of Contemporary Art in Ridgefield, Connecticut.
And there you go. and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Eric. Eric with us from St. Louis.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Great.
Well, you mentioned people who find themselves in this position. I was a newspaper reporter reporting on media in New York for about 10 years, and invariably there would be cable shows, Brian Williams, Court TV, whatever, that would want somebody, sort of a media person, to talk about media coverage of things. So I was sitting in these rooms and conscious enough that somebody like Harry Shearer might be watching and recording the damn thing, that you really just have to, you have to pray that you're not going to do something stupid or look stupid or pick your nose or fiddle with your hair like John Edwards did. I mean, it's a harrowing kind of thing, because you really do have to assume that somebody's watching all the time.
Well, look, when their camera's on and the lights are on, yeah, that's a good assumption to make. By the way, I must, in all immodesty, say that the John Edwards hair-fluffing footage was mined from a previous show at a gallery in Washington, D.C. So I gave that gift to the Internet.
Is there other stuff?
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Eric. Is there other stuff that we should know the attribution of?
Oh, no, I think that's the one, because that really flew free. Slate.com did a piece about that exhibition, and they said, can we have a piece of footage? And I gave them the John Edwards, and then somebody put music to it and put it on YouTube, and it just, you know, went viral. So I'm just staking my claim to it. But no, I think generally pretty much everybody knows what what I've done. But, you know, just to reiterate, What I do is not try to, in these silent pieces, is not try to catch people looking stupid. That's not the point. The point is to catch them, their real selves, or as close as one can get to their real selves if they've got, you know, clothes on, which is these moments, and sometimes they stretch into half hours and 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's remarkable, really, if you start touting it up, how much time famous and highly paid people spend sitting doing nothing in front of a television camera. It's a huge waste of energy, among other things.
Has anybody ever complained to you about the images you've received?
Yeah, the lawyer for Diane Sawyer, to make an inappropriate rhyme, I did a game show on Comedy Central, and the last round, the lightning round, had celebrities participating via satellite, you know, with basically this footage, because they'd never said anything, so they never won. And that was the joke of the bit.
I see.
And ABC's lawyer called, you know, on behalf of Diane Sawyer because they thought it was inappropriate. But by that time, the show had been canceled, so it was moot.
And I wonder, are people like Diane Sawyer? This installation is mostly about politicians, but there are on-air personalities, Chris
yes.
Matthews, that sort of thing, James Carville, and I think Keith Olbermann. Do media types behave any differently than the politicians?
I think they behave a little more spontaneously, as befits their comfort level in front of the camera. You know, they live so much of their life, especially cable people who, you know, spend hours a day in front of a camera, that on the air, off the air, it sort of blends. You know, I mean, they get a little hyper, they talk louder, they yell more. But aside from that, you know, it reminds me of the early days of this when ABC had a three-anchor format for their nightly news. And there was a guy named Max Robinson in Chicago who was satellited in every night to do two lines of, you know, in Wall Street, stocks were up today, and then, you know, one little lead-in. But they did the show three times because of its technical complexity. So he spent an hour and a half in front of the camera every day to say, you know, 40 seconds worth of stuff. So he really lived his life in front of the camera. You know, you'd hear him talking to, you know, calling up and ordering stereo equipment and stuff like that. He literally lived his life on the air.
Now, these images, I've seen them on the internet. I think a lot of people have.
Mm-hmm.
Whose idea was it that they'd make a great installation at a museum?
Well, I've been doing them in art contexts starting in like 1988 at a museum in Orange County. And this series really started in 2004 with the Connor Contemporary Art Gallery in Washington asked me to do a show right before the election. So I did, you know, everybody in the election cycle that year. It was called FaceTime. And then Lee Connor talked to a gallery owner in New York, Susan Inglett, and we did a similar show this year. And that's the show that's Silent Echo Chamber that traveled to the museum, because Richard Klein, the curator of the museum, saw the show at the gallery and said, "I want that." I said, okay.
All right. Never know who's going to be going through the gallery.
That's right.
And at one point, it was in the storefront of in the store window.
In Barney's windows in 1992, when the Democratic Convention was in New York, I did all the characters from the Democratic Convention, and they were just arrayed on TV monitors through the windows of Barney's downtown. And that was the most fun, to walk just on the street corner and listen to people explain it to each other or to their kids. That was really the high point of that. I wasn't as well known then visually, so I could hear people do that.
Harry Shearer, thanks very much, and good luck with the exhibition.
Thank you, Neil.
Harry Shearer with us from a studio in Hollywood. The Silent Echo Chamber is on exhibit at the Aldrich Museum of Contemporary Art in Connecticut. Harry also hosts Le Show on KCRW and many public radio stations, and has a new CD out called Songs of the Bushmen that's been nominated for a Grammy. So we wish him good luck with that. Tomorrow, Clay Shirky joins us to talk about the next phase in the social and economic evolution of the Internet. Join us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.